This is Jerry Pippin on the line from Hawaii. We have Jack Collier. We're talking about the Phoenix Project and the Philadelphia Experiment and other things of this nature with Jack Collier, who has an incredible story to tell us. And Jack, before the break, we were explaining that I guess the scientific minds got together there with the Manhattan Project at the Chicago World's Fair. Is that right?
That's right.
And they started doing this research. Basically, what were they trying to do with this research around the Philadelphia Experiment? What was that about?
Okay, initially, they knew that they could make a ship disappear, but they wanted to project it to another place. The USS Eldridge was a specially made and designed ship, and it had two points of berth, the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard and the Norfolk Shipyard. They were about 300 miles apart. And so it was berthed in both places, so they had equipment at both places. And so they knew that if they could make it disappear in Philadelphia, that it would reappear in Norfolk, Virginia, which it did. It was photographed in both places. Now, this took a total of 30 minutes of time to do before it came back.
So they literally transported this. They had the technology in 1943 to be able to take this ship. And how much of a distance is that?
300 miles.
300 miles.
That's stated very clearly in a book called Anti-Gravity in the World Grid. You know, and it was published in 1985, I think, edited by David Hatcher Childress.
Now, naturally, this, and it's so incredible. I just have a lot of trouble thinking about it. But
okay.
We had talked about the break before that they had made things to disappear before, smaller objects, wooden objects.
Right.
But this was a huge ship, right?
Yeah, it was a destroyer escort size. It was called a destroyer escort USS Eldridge. That was the name of it.
And they literally, the thing was transported magically from Philadelphia shipyards to Norfolk.
Yeah. The subtitle of that was called also Project Invisibility, which it did do. Now, the men that were on that ship, and myself included, I was carried aboard the ship on the fantail part of the ship on a stretcher. I knew by that time how to stop my heart. I knew because I had studied things like this. And,
so the people on the ship were handpicked for this project?
Yeah, they had been handpicked. Primarily, they tried to pick people who had been contacted by aliens from another dimension sometime earlier in their life. If possible.
Well, now, Jack, the more we talk about this, the more incredible this is, begins to sound each time. Now, we had talked, I remember back in Missouri, back in the 20s, you had been, you had an experience with a UFO,
I was born October in 1921. And when I was just 5 years old, and this was 1926, there was a small spaceship landed on our wooded farm. We had a big farm right on the bank of the Missouri River. And it was not only myself, but there was others who had been contacted by aliens, and I knew who they were. I was just 5 years, just beyond 5 years old. They took a little sample of flesh out of my knee. The scar is still there. It'll always be there. They put an implant in behind my left ear, which is still there. And we had, my own particular case, I had more than one soul living inside my body with me, and I knew that, and members of my family knew that, but we didn't talk about that, because we were well in harmony, and I got along good with that.
Well, what about the rest of these people that were on this?
I knew several of them. I saw several of them later, say in 1945, you know, and most of them were hospitalized, and, you know, they never regained, you know, the proper use of their mind.
So it was more of an emotional and mental thing rather than a physical thing.
Well, and two, they had lost their soul. Their soul left their body while they were still alive, and they never came back. And it's very difficult to live without your soul, because the soul is part of our being, right?
Well, yeah, I would think that the soul would make us Homo sapiens, which would make us human beings.
Absolutely, and also the keeper of our records.
So what happened to these people who you say didn't have a soul anymore? I mean, how did they behave?
Well, they most of them passed away those whose parts of their body was not embedded where a steel became visible, and they had been able to move around. I was not able to move around. I was kind of up on the back, and I was stationary position, and so...
You were strapped in the stretcher.
Yeah, absolutely. The movie that they made out of it, there's a little black dot. It shows on the ship with a guy laying there on a stretcher with his arm hanging over the side, and that's me. And I've got burns on my arms to prove it right now. But they did not appear until almost 50 years later.
Wow. Hold on. We've got to go to the phone calls, and I have to find more about this. But on the line, we have Jack Collier. And, Jack, your story is so incredible to me. I hope you forgive me sometime when I lift my voice in disbelief sometime. But it's just hard to understand this. You're a very intelligent man. I've talked to you off the air a lot. And so I hope in this hour that we spend together, you'll be able to let me see the story for what it really is.
Well, we'll do our best.
Okay, and I, if it's okay, I'd like to go to the phones, too, and let our listeners ask some questions, okay?
Who knows? We might uncover someone who's been in hiding for a long time.
That's right. There's not many people around that survived this, are there? I guess you're the only one that I know of.
Well, I know a couple more.
Okay. But they're very, so maybe somebody will call in or contact us later that was there, that saw this. Let's go to the phone. Scott in Wichita, Kansas.
Hello, Jerry.
Hey, good to have you listening, Scott.
Thank you. Let me ask a two-part question, and I'll take my answer off the air. Going back to the time of the Philadelphia experiment, this first part of my question is, who would have been more to benefit from the experiment, the Japanese or the Germans? And part two of my question, and please forgive me for the gore of this question, but going back, relating to the movie itself, how true was that graphically when the ship was to reappear out of the cloaking device and the bodies laying around as they were? And thank you for taking my call, and I'll listen on the radio.
Okay, Jack, did you get that?
Yeah, the experiment was absolutely true, about it becoming invisible and back. And I remembered the screams of the men whose arms or part of their leg or part of their torso became solid in a piece of steel. That was depicted at the very end of the movie. They showed very slightly of it, but the memory of those screams, stayed in my ears for quite a few days after that.
So for our listeners who didn't see the movie, you're saying that when it reappeared, the people that were moving around became part of the solid...
Yeah, well, they became embedded in part of the pieces of steel. See, everything, all of us became invisible, to the naked eye or to radar for a period of 30 minutes. Now, during that 30 minutes, we also went into 1985.
And this was back in 43, so you went ahead 42...
Yeah, we went ahead 42 years because it was postulated then by another scientist, his last name was Oppenheimer, who was considered the father of the detonating device for the atomic bomb.
Yeah, I started to say that's a familiar name in science.
And so they had to send some of us into the future to find out how to detonate that bomb so that it would not cause a chain reaction. That was one of the purposes. Another purpose was, had it been very successful, they could have put that device on every Liberty ship and every transport and moved equipment around totally invisible and also almost instantaneously anywhere in the world. Now, to answer the question about who benefited most by this Philadelphia experiment, of course the United States did, because it was done under the auspices of our United States Navy Office of Naval Research. And from the Philadelphia experiment, the Phoenix Project was born and is still being used today, and I cannot discuss all of the ramifications why it's being used today.
Yeah, we want to get into that after the break here, and we got another caller as well. And I want you to discuss as much as you can, Jack. And I know you are held to secrecy on some of these things even today, right?
Right.
I have to ask before the breakdown. These people that were found them part of the steel or whatever, a limb or whatever. What happened to those men? Did they die? Or?
Those, if it was just a hand or a foot or something else, they had corpsmen and they had people there.
They amputated, in other words.
They amputated with the use of anesthetic and of course, all of that.
Mm. We have Jack Collier on the line from Hawaii. We're talking about the Philadelphia experiment right now and some incredible things that Jack is talking about here. We are going to get to the Phoenix Project in a moment with you, Jack, but we do have Gary on the line from Kansas City, which is very close to where you were born.
Yep.
Gary, you're on the line with Jack Collier and Jerry Pippin.
It's good to talk to you. You're a fascinating guy. You ought to have your own talk show. Hey, I wanted to ask you now, who was it that swore you to secrecy? Was this the government?
No, this was Albert Einstein and Oppenheimer, and on the Phoenix Project, I was sworn to secrecy by Edgar Cayce. He was involved in the Phoenix Project, and not the Philadelphia Experiment.
Okay.
That brings in another man who is very, very spiritual, and who people who have followed his life, a very simple man from Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Right, isn't there supposed to be a movie coming out about Edgar Cayce?
There will be soon, I'm sure of it, and I know something about that.
Okay, and let's see, who was, how many people survived this?
I'm not sure. I only know one other man personally that survived. I know him personally, but I do know there's another man either in California or New Mexico, and his name has been published in many magazines. His name is Al Blayla.
Have you written any books yourself?
No, I have not.
Okay, and wasn't there somebody that was an author that tried to write a book about this, and I think he turned up killed right before he tried to publish it or something?
I'm not sure of that. I know of the two authors, Charles Billis and William Moore, who wrote a real documented account of that. It took them many years to do that. It was called The Philadelphia Experiment Project Invisibility. That was on the title of the book. And, of course, that book is available in most every bookstore and in paperback now.
Okay, Gary, you got time for one more question.
Yeah, why were you able to survive it and all these other people weren't?
Because I had two extra souls living in my body, and including my own.
And those two died and you're still...
A sister and a brother.
Okay.
And my sister left during the Philadelphia experiment. But my brother stayed with me, and I was, by 10 days, they cooled me down in a flotation tank of pure water, because we were really electrified, you might say, or we were had turned into a total cosmic being by this time. And by cooling me down in water, I was able to return to duty in about 10 or 12 days.
So you're saying after the Philadelphia experiment, you were tied down in the cot, a stretcher, so you couldn't move around. So you didn't come back with one of your limbs as part of the wall or whatever. And they had to cool you down at that point.
After I was taken off the ship.
Were you? It wasn't radiation.
No, there was no radiation involved. No.
Okay, it was just electrical energy.
It was the vibrations used to make things become invisible. As developed from Einstein's equation, you know, of E equals MC squared.
So you had this...
M for mass and C for consciousness, you know, and then you double that. And, that was part of the basic formula. But without the brilliance of a scientist named Nikola Tesla, none of this would have ever happened.
We talk about Einstein and all the others, but you talk about Nikola Tesla quite a lot in that he have the basic theory right or what?
Well, Tesla could take anybody's theory and make it work. Like he was totally given credit for creating alternating current. He came here from Yugoslavia, and he was also determined that he was not even born on this planet, that he was brought here from another planet, and he knew that. You know?
Well, how about Einstein? Was he a human being?
Einstein had had alien connections, but he was not for sure. He was born here of Jewish family, had lived in Israel and Germany, and came to the United States, taught at Cambridge, of course.
Now, this Philadelphia experiment, was this the only time they literally tried this experiment with human beings and a big ship like that? Did they ever try it?
The only time.
And the results were so horrible, they just shut it down? Was that the deal?
Well, they shut it down, but the knowledge that they gained from that, you know, was that they had to find boys or girls or people who had dual-soul people. There was a books written about this, oh, 10 or 15, maybe 20 years ago. Ruth Montgomery writes about aliens among us.
Yes.
And she writes about what they call the walk-in principle. And of course, I didn't know what they called it, but I knew that I had two extra souls living in my body with me, and I knew how to find other kids who had the same thing. And so... So
if somebody listening out there that has more than one soul, they would be aware of it.
They would be aware of it. And they would also be aware that it was harmony living with them. You know, that was causing them no problems. And it was actually to come and offer them a service.
Well, conversely, I guess if you had a couple of souls inside you didn't get along, then you'd be in pretty bad shape.
And you would probably be in a mental ward in an institution somewhere. You know, or you would commit suicide because of the...
Were you able to see any of these? These were all sailors, right, that were in
the... They were men from all branches of the service. And they had to be men that were volunteers, not people who were... We already had a lot of people who were drafted.
Were you able to see any of the people later who had foot amputated their arm or whatever?
I have not seen anyone. I saw three or four people that we knew, and that when we saw each other, there was some recognition about us, either through our eyes or through a vibration that we knew. I was probably one of the more younger ones, being only... I was born in 21, and this happened in 43. I was only 22 years old.
Now, when did you go in the Navy, 39?
I went in the Army Air Corps in 1939.
Okay, you were in the Army. I'm sorry. I always assumed you were in the Navy there.
No,
Army Air Corps. Okay, now... How did you hear about this? I mean, or how did they find out that you might want to volunteer?
Through a strange incident that happened while I was in the military in Columbia, South Carolina, very close to Philadelphia. I had to be in the hospital for some reason, I forget now, but I begged the doctor that was going to do a minor surgery not to use Novocaine, that my heart would quit. And he said, nobody's allergic to Novocaine, and he used it anyway. My heart did stop, but they got it started again. And when I came to, they had already completed the operation, and the doctor said, "Who is this guy Roger you was calling to?" And I said, "You're not supposed to know about him, but he is my, like my twin soul that lives with me, and he protects me from getting in trouble." And I said, "I also have some other angels that travel with me all the time, and you probably can't see them." And so I just figured that I should...
This guy must have put that in your medical record.
Yeah, well, yeah, he did. And then he said, "Well, what is that strange scar on the inside of your left knee?" And I said, "Well, since I've already told you this, I said, I'm sure that I can trust you, you being a major or a flight colonel." I said, "That was when I was visited by aliens from another dimension when I was about 5 or 6 years old." And so that went into my military record also.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Jeff on the line who is listening to us on KMBS 1310 AM in Monroe, Louisiana. Hello, Jeff. You're on the air with...
Hi. How y'all doing?
Fine.
All right. Hey, listen, I just got home, kind of tuned in to all this.
Hold on, Jeff. Don't go away. We'll be back with you and Jack Conger in a moment.